you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, I'm Paco Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And you are listening to Sup Doc, a show where we talk about documentaries with guests from TV, film, comedy, and more.
On today's episode, we'll be talking to comedian and director Jordan Brady.
Jordan Brady was a stand-up comedian touring nightclubs across America, a self-taught filmmaker. He directed 4 narrative feature films, 3 full documentaries, and over 1,200 commercials, as well as Maria Bamford's acclaimed Netflix special.
In 2016, Jordan completed his passion project, a feature documentary trilogy on what it takes to be a stand-up comedian. I Am Comic stars Sarah Silverman, Leslie Jones, and more. 2014's aptly titled I Am Road Comic stars Wayne Fetterman and Mark Maron. The most personal film of his career is I Am Battle Comic. Filming took Brady to Afghanistan, Kuwait, and undisclosed parts of the Middle East, where a group of USO comedians provide laughter for the troops.
Jordan hosts the popular filmmaking podcast Respect the Process, described as the Rosetta Stone of filmmaking, and teaches a commercial directing boot camp. And now here is our guest, Jordan Brady. Hey.
Wow. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on, George, Paco. That was the longest intro ever.
We're going to have to loop our theme music a couple times just to cover that. But you've done a lot. So 1,200 fucking commercials.
It might even be more now because I've done probably 30, 40 in the last 9 months.
Holy crap.
Yeah, the pandemic shut us down. And then I started in July of 2020 and have been working straight through.
And you guys got early like protocol for sets and stuff?
The community of commercial producers really worked it out. With SAG and the DGA and the Directors Guild and the IATSE, you know, there were Zooms aplenty trying to figure out protocol and testing. I've been tested 30, 40 times.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Did they find anything?
No, nothing.
That's good.
I did one thing where I had to do the testing like the day before and then one on the day of, and or not the day of, they had like 2 days before and then the day before. And it was like the spit test. Luckily at that point, I just had to spit in a thing.
Oh, I've never done that one.
Yeah.
I would always tip them so I could get the rectal test.
That's smart. Yeah.
It's fun for everyone.
Yeah.
That's not the COVID test though. That's a different kind of test.
Oops.
I want to before we get into your filmmaking. So you have was a stand-up comedian. So you no longer do stand-up comedy?
Not professionally. I mean, I didn't for many years, but I Am Road Comic was the first time I did a real road gig in like 20 some years. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think 2014. And then I did an I Am Battle Comic, which by the way is a terrible name for a documentary. It's probably the worst
about
name.
Roast battle?
Yeah. Are they going to roast each other? Is it like your mama jokes? What a terrible name. For I Am Battle Comic, I had to perform to be able to go on the tour with Armed Forces Entertainment because they wouldn't pay just a guy to document it and I couldn't just go. So the other comedians and the producer of the tour said, well, if you do like 10, 15 minutes, then you can go on the trip. And I brought some gear.
Oh, nice.
I mean, somebody will foolishly invite me to do their mic around Los Angeles. So I do it a couple times a year, but I got nothing to prove. So it's actually fun and, and I'm fearless about it. Like I don't give a fuck. I'm not in the sell Jordan Brady as a comedian business. So it makes it more fun.
Right. Once that kind of challenge and competition and fear of like missing out on things is gone, then I would imagine stand-up becomes a lot more fun.
It's a blast. I mean, when you see famous people return to stand-up, then you get that. Like you go, oh, like Ray Romano walked into the Comedy Cellar for a special, right?
Right.
Am I getting that right? And it's kind of a doc mixed comedy special. You could tell he's just effortlessly doing it. When people say, oh, it's not like riding a bike, you can't just get back on stage and do it. Yeah, you can. I mean, you may not kill, but.
Right. It's going to feel weird. Yeah, I just did stand-up live for the first time in almost a year on Friday, and it was...
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember any of my transitions, opening jokes, closings. It was a big mess, but it was
fun. Do you write on your hand? Do you write the...
No. Nope, I don't. I probably... Because I don't stick... I'm like, I do a lot of crowd work, a lot of riffing. So, and then if you try to do material with that, it's a big mess, unless you've done it over and over, you know?
Well, that's I agree. That was my problem even now when someone will say, hey, come do the set. I'll try to just riff the whole thing because if you riff for like 4 or 5 minutes off the room, off someone in the crowd, I like watching the other comedians.
Right.
Like I'll even go up with the phone and go, oh, didn't you like her? She was great. I loved her routine about spatulas or whatever the fuck it is. And then you try to do material.
Right.
It's like, oh, you're not making it up anymore.
No, we don't.
Oh,
like
this is.
Yeah.
We don't like you.
That. Crowds will turn on you if you'd go to material after doing some riffing. They're just like, or just get quiet, which is even worse, you know?
You know, perennial guest Wayne Fetterman of your show, who I think has been on 13 times.
It's, I think, 13.
He, when we went on the road for that I Am Road comic available on iTunes or wherever, he gave me shit after the first show. Because I made him, I was like, I can't close the show. Like, you have to close every show.
Right.
And I would do all this bullshit riffing with the crowd and crowd work. And I had some routines. I had tried out new stuff preparing for the gig. And he's like, you know, you're teaching the crowd that it's okay to talk and yell out. Doug Benson said the same thing. He's like, yeah, you had to do crowd work, Jordan, because you didn't have any material. You hadn't been doing it. So that screws the headliner.
Yeah, have you ever had in the film, right? Yeah, yeah.
In the film, yeah. Have you ever had a headliner?
Scolding you at the camera, basically. Oh,
for sure. Have you ever had a headliner or someone that had to follow you at a gig say, don't do crowd work?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, sure have. I actually got dropped from a tour because of that. Yeah.
What was that conversation like?
It was with the manager, his manager. So It was pretty easy for him.
Did you see the comedian again after the talk?
Not for about a year, and then now we're talking again. But my last set, I went up on stage, I riffed, I killed, I walked off stage, and he was waiting to go on in his intro, and I said, "Sorry, I did so well, buddy." And then because they told me before the show, she was basically before the show, she was like, "A, no riffing. B, it has to be clean." And I was like, okay, because the Lynyrd Skynyrd band was in the audience and they wanted, he wanted to have a great set because he was friends and they were like Southern royalty. So She gave me this kind of like, you can't, don't riff and don't do, and no swear words. So
She the manager,
yeah.
He the comic,
yeah.
And Lynyrd Skynyrd contemporary.
Contemporary, yeah. New band, this upstart young kids with mopped hair.
No, I meant the headliner was a contemporary of.
Oh right, yeah.
Of Lynyrd Skynyrd. Yeah.
Just trying to like, you're like just trying to like 20 questions, like who is this guy?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So anywho, I yeah. So that's what happened. I went up the second set, and I just can't help myself. I mean, sometimes there's people in the audience. There's one guy with his feet on the stage. He was drinking a bucket of Bud Light. And I was just like, I can't help it. And so I just talked to him and it was very funny. And I got off and they're like, I was like, sorry. But
I think the headliner should be able to follow anything.
I do too. Thank you. I think you should be, if you can't ride a wave, then you're stuck in your material. You know, is that a Police song? Stuck? No. So like, stuck in material, girl. Like if you can't ride that wave, if someone kills in front of you and you can't go up and ride it and work with it, then it's like, what is that? Are you more of a writer than a performer at that point?
Well, yes. And to your point, couldn't a headliner go up and go, hey, you still got half a bucket of beer, but we've talked enough to you. So I'm going to move on and give the people a show. Right. Like you could just like Tai Chi it, right? Use that riff energy in your favor and then start to your material.
But that means you have to think, I think, you know, that means you have to have a, some sort of plan or some sort of stage, not stage presence, but like an active brain on stage, let's say. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, there's some people who think if you riff, then there's a lot of comics, I believe, that just do material. And if you riff, they just don't like you because they think you're trying too hard. You know, I feel like there's comics who just do material. It's like, you look like a dancing clown up there or whatever, you know, like I think people look down on people who riff.
So you're saying there's something wrong with dancing clowns?
I would never disparage a dancing yeah. clown, yeah. especially if they have a dog with a top hat.
Oh, my God. Always funny.
Oh, Jesus. There's, and I don't think Wayne Fetterman has done enough on the history of stand-up about dogs and hats.
You know, that would be an interesting documentary.
The Victrola dog. Actually, it was
the Trilla dog. That was your Wayne Fetterman impression.
That was my Wayne Fetterman impression. So,
thanks for having me.
Had a great time.
Oh man,
we round drank, 14.
Didn't we drink soda with Wayne on mic? Did we record that?
I don't remember. Was it Orangina? I feel like we had an Orangina conversation. The last time I was over there was to do that one interview with him, and then he's like, "You want to check out my drum set?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And like we just hung out in his garage for a second with playing around his drum set.
Nice.
His neighbors loved it. Neighbors loved it. Speaking of like, yeah, Wayne also did the USO tours. Cause he's in I Am Battle Comic. You have a few like, and interestingly, black and white shots of interviews. What was the choice of doing black and white for those interviews in I Am Battle Comic?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. I Am Battle Comic was shot entirely on the Sony, you know, AX35 camcorder. It's capable of 4K, but I chose not to use that because I literally was a crew of one. Mm. So when I did the interviews, a lot of them were in my office, this office that you see on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And I painted that wall gray, so it'd be like a neutral color for shooting. And then the interviews in I Am Battle Comic, terrible name if I haven't mentioned that. it just would separate them, the interviews from the action, and the gray and the lighting, and I'm in a little room. It just felt like it would equalize the interviews, right? Because some of them were not in this office. Like George Lopez had a photo shoot on a white psych. So I made that black and white and tried to match the other ones. It just was a way to separate the shitty footage on the road from the shitty interview. I Am Road Comic is probably the least cinematic of the movies. That was an older camcorder. But I have a whole theory about documentary indie docs at the level, the micro budget that I make, and that is keep a tourniquet on spending, right? Because then you can you can realize a profit.
Zero food budget. Comes back. Yeah.
No
craft services. Resources. Yeah. Yeah.
No, there was no craft services.
Does it record on like an S card? Like what format is this camcorder we're talking about?
Okay. You want me to show you? Can I go get it and show you? It's right there.
Yeah. Hold on. Great podcasting. Yeah. Show us.
We'll play a little music. Paul Schaefer in the band. Why don't you play us a little? George, can you hum something?
I was thinking of literally the hum song, which is Stars, but I don't remember. It's like, she's out back counting stars. Like, do you know what I'm... Never mind. Hum, when you say hum.
Gotcha.
90s, of course.
Right. Yeah.
You can trim out my walk to the cabinet, I hope, but...
This is a Sanford and Son right there, yeah.
Simple sling pack, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then in the side... is a camcorder.
Oh, wow. That's like
it's a consumer camcorder.
Wow.
It's, I had loaned it to someone, so my name's on it. And then I had a wireless mic or a shotgun mic. Mm-hmm. I would switch them out. And I was shooting in Toronto, LA, New York for like 6 months, commercials, right? leading up to the trip to fly to Kuwait, then go to Afghanistan and other places. So I would go out at night and I would talk to people on the street, practicing how quickly I could take the camera out of the back, out of the sling pack, mount up, turn it on, hand someone a mic or clip it to someone like a wireless clip on. And I would interview them and go back and watch the footage. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I had a handheld light that I would put on the side, or I would learn to find light in public. And no one's ever seen that footage, right? But it was getting those 10,000 hours with the tool that I was going to use.
Right.
That's how I found out like 4K would eat up all these memory cards. So the whole movie exists on, you know, like 12 SD cards. I bought one in the Kingdom of Bahrain when I ran out, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was, it actually looks really good. Like I had a professional colorist color the movie and everything.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. It's not what I expected. And how did, so you weren't able to edit it on site or anything? You just waited till you got back from the tour?
I didn't even back up the footage.
You didn't? Okay.
I have this Pelican case the size of an iPhone that I kept. It's made for SD cards. And a couple of military bases, like in Kuwait, they wanted to take all our stuff. And I just kept it in my pocket. And I said, I have to have it. It's the whole film. And I didn't take a laptop. I didn't take a hard drive. I just said, it's too much shit to carry.
Right.
So I didn't edit till I got home.
And that's really rolling the dice then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And was there anything that you thought you had that you didn't have?
Something I shot that wasn't here when I came home? No, I got everything. I wish, in hindsight, I'd take a second camera for audience shots.
Oh, right. Like one stable, whatever, set camera. Oh, interesting.
Don Barnhart, a very funny comedian that's been doing these tours since the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
And also a very talented hypnotist. He produced that tour and and invited me to go. And Don...
Did he hypnotize you first?
I think he hypnotized me into doing the documentary.
You will make a documentary.
Yes. He did, would call me up and say, let's talk about the cut. You're getting very sleepy. The sound of my voice will influence your edits.
Cut out Slade.
Call it I Am Battle Comic.
Yeah. Really? He's the one? That's how it happened.
I was going to ask you, what would you name it if not I Am Battle Comic?
I wanted to call, the better title would have been I Am Comic Military Grade.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. It doesn't really fit I Am Comic, I Am Road Comic, I Am Battle Comic. Yeah. Doesn't quite fit the trilogy, but.
I'm open for suggestions.
I don't know. Yeah.
So the best title is Laughganistan. Okay. Which is a documentary by Graham Elwood, where he took a camcorder around and he was out in these forward operating bases with sand crab spiders the size of, you know, chihuahuas. It's a funny doc.
Huh. Interesting. How far did you guys get from the front in any of these?
You know, we were supposed to fly in a helicopter. That's the one thing I didn't come home with. But it wasn't shot, was we were supposed to fly in these helicopters, you know, 30 kilometers. Like we were pretty close. In Bagram, you're really close to forward FOBs, they call them, forward operating bases. And it was raining. And they said, well, we can't go because it's raining. And I was like, helicopters don't fly in the rain? Like, the war stops with precipitation? I'm sorry, Captain. I'm going to challenge you on this.
Yeah, that's weird that they can't fly in weird incremental weather.
I think they just didn't want to take us out and right. in the rain and something like, about a return trip.
Don hypnotized him. And he's like, now we shall fly.
I mean, I kind of wish there was more shit that happened. Like,
right.
I mean, for the doc, you kind of, you know, hoping you'd hear a bullet whiz by or a bomb would go. There were some attacks at the base, upon the base that we were at. But the base is so big, it's like a small city.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
what year was this 2016 that you shot?
I went in 2016. I edited when I came back, and that took, you know, it takes about a year to for the film to ferment into a cut.
Right.
And I'm proud to say we've given we've almost raised $50,000 over the life of the film, all to charity. So I paid for the film. I paid for the distribution to, it started with a 6-city theatrical tour. And I would have advertising agencies that I work with sponsor a screening. We'd sell out the theater, and people from different military charities would come. This was so cool. They would have a card reader on their phone. And as we would do a Q&A afterwards with some comics, like Slade came with me, Tammy Pescatelli came to a bunch, Don came to one. They would, the volunteers would swipe people's credit cards in the audience to raise money.
Oh, wow.
So like in LA, we gave the money to Operation Gratitude. They give and ship care packages to U.S. troops overseas. And the Operation Gratitude, they have it so dialed in. I think we raised like $9,000 at one screening, because here we gave them the 100% of the ticket sales and we ate the cost of the theater rental. And then during the Q&A, Tammy would be like, "You people better whip out your credit cards. They're going to come through the aisles." And people would. They would just hand their card and make a $50 donation, $100 donation.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's awesome. Wow. That's amazing. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that this proceeds were going to charity from this doc.
I just got a check because I have a new distributor that bought the old distributor's company.
Yeah.
Monterey Media was the old company, and they distributed I Am Comic, the first one. And so I got to check. There's like some pennies from VOD or iTunes, and I have not given that to charity yet.
Okay.
But I've paid for the film, so right. I'm okay. I just was like, this is a nightmare. I'm going to separate the 87 cents from the other.
Right. Yeah. Let's go to a clip. I think for me, like one of the clips that really stands out is when Slade is talking about a soldier that he had met and got to know and became, it's very poignant. It's a very touching moment. I will say it's a very beautiful, it's beautifully shot. He's very sincere. It's very touching. However, there is a guy in the back.
Yeah. Know what to do with that.
And a fly. There's a fly in the frame too.
And I was like, did his cat get stuck up there? What is happening?
It's the Mike Pence fly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for those who have seen this doc and who will, you'll know what I'm talking about. But let's listen to that clip and we'll talk on the other side of it.
In 2003, Sergeant Jose Velez inadvertently became my biggest fan. Kid had the CD, he memorized every word. We'd get letters back from the unit, and they would say, "Velez won't shut up about you." And to me, this little kid, man, I've been doing comedy a handful of years. I've been overseas, but not many times. Flattered, mind blown. Holy wow, someone's into what I'm doing. One day I show up at the club, and it was nothing unusual. Get a package from these guys with a card in it. This is a bigger package than usual. And I open it up, and inside is the unit coin from their task force, and it's an engraved little plaque. And the patch off Velez's jacket, the United States patch. He was killed in action in November of 2004. And I just sat there, man. I don't cry, man. I don't cry at all. For the unit to have taken the time to peel that American flag patch off and decide that I was the guy they needed to send it to. These are the things I think about when I come out here. You never know if the guy you're performing for, shaking your hand, snapping the picture with, that's your Facebook buddy today, is gonna be there tomorrow. That's Afghanistan and Iraq are real. And if I get to take that kid away from that situation for that long, why not, right? How many chances do you get to do something that cool?
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
So, Jordan, you mentioned that this is your most personal film, the I Am Battle comic. So why is it so, what made it so personal for you?
Well, that clip made it very personal. I'm so glad that was the clip I was going to suggest. There's an interesting story. I was in the edit room here in my office for weeks cutting the film. And I finally get it to like an hour and 40 minutes. And I ask my wife, because I'm cutting in a vacuum, right? It's just me. And my wife comes to the office. We sit down. We make it dark. And we have some popcorn and sodas. And about 7 or 8 minutes in, she stops. She goes, slaps the pause button, you know, the space bar on my Mac, and goes, "What the hell am I watching? This is like a travel log. Why do I care? I don't care anything about this and your buddies that you met and laughing." Because I'd never met Slade Ham before this. I knew Don. I knew Bob Kubota. Jeff Capri I'd met once. And then I traveled with Jeff. So we got to know each other for a couple of days in the air. And she's like, "I just don't even care about this." And I go, "Well, here, let me show you this." And I fast forward to like 30 minutes into the movie, and it's Slade by the tree. And the sound was really bad. Like, we tried to eke stuff out. The guy's looking for his lost lemur in the tree. There's a fly. And my wife goes, "If you don't put that in the first 10 minutes of the movie, no one's going to care. If you put that clip, when I see that clip, I know why I'm invested in this. I know why you're doing it. I know why Don's done it for 30 years now." So I credit my wife, who makes great documentaries herself, with changing the whole arc of the film.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Wow. That's amazing. And yeah, that's the day you realize you loved her.
Yes.
That's the moment. You're like, that's the moment I married this woman.
That's exactly when I fell in love.
Yeah, you have to have like high stakes, right? Like, did they find the lemur, you know?
Right. Well, that's in the sequel. But why it's so personal is because like when I was 16 or 17, I joined the Marines to pay for college. Oh. And then I broke my face. Whoa. And I couldn't go into the Marines. Then I went to college, and I'm there a freshman at Virginia Tech, and a recruiter has my number because I'm in the system. He goes, "You should go to officer candidate school." And I needed to pay for college. I'm from a poor white trash family. So I go to Quantico, Virginia that summer. I go through the Marine Corps officer candidate school. And while I'm there, I had already done stand-up on campus. Like, I always wanted to be a comedian. And I remember the captain calling me in going, "So what's this about stand-up comedy on campus?" Like they'd done research.
Wow.
Like, you know, a background check.
What's this whole joke about airplane food?
Yeah. Why are men and women different? Right. So I dropped out. I dropped out of college and I got booked at the Virginia Beach Comedy Club. Like I never went back to school. And about a year later after that, the government called and said, hey, you're technically AWOL. Like you didn't finish officer candidate school. You know, you go back a second summer. So you can either pay us back the money that we paid you for college. You can go to the Navy brig, which is jail. You can go to Paris Island and be a private first class or get back in college.
Holy shit.
And but this time I'm doing the road. Like the comedy boom has swept me up and I'm playing Dothan, Alabama comedy zones and the comedy caravan in Muncie,
Indiana.
You know, Indiana.
Yeah.
So by chance, by fate, I played the Roanoke Comedy Club where the recruiter was from. My dad was traveling on a sales trip, met me. I invited Captain Burrell, probably a general by now, the gunny sergeant from like a Vietnam vet that was just intense, but super nice. They came from the recruiter's office. My dad came, loaned me like $500. I got the rest of the advance from the bar, did the show, paid the captain, got an honorable discharge.
Wow.
That, crazy, right?
Could there ever be another one of those stories? I don't think so.
Never.
That is extremely
never.
Unique.
And I had not told that story, and I've never told it on a podcast, but I told that story to a group of Marines in Afghanistan at the Marine, like the, I think the fire department guys, where it's not in the movie. We're just chilling, right? And that's why it's so personal, because I always felt like I needed to give something back. And I'm so anti-war. I'm so against like even why we're in Afghanistan for the last couple decades. But when you meet the women and the men of all races, religions, creeds, socioeconomic backgrounds that volunteer to serve, some have no choice, like that's the only job they can get, and they're over there. And then I learned to segregate my disdain for the war and the war machine with my appreciation and empathy for these kids that I had to pay for college. So I got it.
Makes sense. Huh? That's really interesting. That's a great story. Did you
a little long? I should trim it a little bit. I'm open for edits.
Well, we'll go over that. We have notes. So you had nobody in your family that was in the military?
Oh, my dad was in the Navy. My grandpa was in the Navy in World War II. My uncles were in the Army. And a long history. My cousins have gone into the service.
Right. So it's like once you have, I feel like once you, because my brother was a 30-year Marine. He was a sergeant major. 30 years in the Marines. Yeah. And he had to go to the Marines because a judge gave him two choices, jail or the Marines, because there was a recruitment guy, whatever they're called, recruiters, like at the court. This is old school upstate Michigan kind of judicial system. And the judge was like, three, jail or the Marines? 3, 2, 1. And my brother's like, Marines.
Salute.
Yeah. 30 years. So like for me, I'm the same way. I'm, you know, very anti-war. I don't get it either. It doesn't make any sense. Our military budget is ridiculous. But having a brother and family members that are in the armed services, it's always like, but of course, you know, appreciate and love what the military does, you know, the people that are in it, you know?
Yeah, like in the film, Bob sort of has that, is the voice of that, right? He sort of comes from this more like, he's like, yeah, like I'm like Rollins, or like I'm like critiquing the reason that we are here, but at the same time, I'm supporting the people that are doing it. So, yeah.
It's like dealing with the immediate when you're there, mm-hmm. versus the, you hate the big picture, mm-hmm. but you focus on the minutia of the day and getting by.
Right. Yeah. So how does Jeff, Bob, and Slade and Don, are they always the same group? And then you
know, I was sort of the fifth Beatle, right? I'm the Pete Best of the group for you younger listeners.
So we got Lynyrd Skynyrd. Yeah. We have early Beatles. All right.
Good. I'm the Billy Preston.
Right.
If you will.
That would be awesome.
That is our demographic. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're nailing it.
Right.
Hey, I will tell you something that was interesting to me anyway. I was looking for the end of the movie. Like, how do you end this? This, which is basically a linear, like it's not totally linear. Like Slade, obviously that didn't happen till the end of the tour and it's earlier. And, two things I think your documentary fans will like is the government, the Department of Defense said, you know, you got to blur out some different names and you got to blur out, like, don't shoot the entrances to bases and you got to blur out the hotel you're at. Mm-hmm. When, if you go on YouTube, you know, there's soldiers posting their YouTube videos and whole units going, "Welcome to Bagram Airfield. Let us give you a tour. Our grid coordinates are," it's all over the internet, but I had to blur shit out. So rather than fight it, I just start blurring shit out at random. And it gave this feeling of like, wow, this is a real clandestine film. It's top secret. And then I would use shots, a couple from YouTube that I ripped off and a couple from different bases. I would just scramble them. But you know what I mean? So the exterior shot of one base is used for another just because I don't want to be the guy that the Taliban like is on some video on the web going, "We watched I Am Battle comic. Terrible name, by the way." And we found the coordinates to the base. Right. I don't do the Taliban impression, but
it's pretty good.
Thanks. Yeah.
My question is then, like, was it someone from, like, how much government intervention is part of that? Like, did you work with pretty much just USO and USO is not government? And they're like, "You got to take these things out." Or was there, did you have to run this by anyone in the military for the blurring out of things?
Yes. Not the USO, because Armed Forces Entertainment, which like services USO tours.
Okay.
They were involved, but they didn't censor it. It was someone at the Department of Defense who watched. I gave them a film with time code and they were super duper specific, like, on the refrigerator, there's a calendar of who's going to appear and where. Could you blur that out? Wow. There's a conference code on the whiteboard in the back of the ballistics guy's interview. Could you blur that out?
The Wi-Fi password's up.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit like that, yeah.
So it was really cool. But creatively, there was only one thing. A woman got, this is crazy. So back in the 80s, I used to do a bit that would end with bounce chicka wow wow. It was like porn music. Like that was my get her done. That was my hot pockets. Mm-hmm. And I know it sounds hack, like a lot of the listeners are like, "Everybody does that." Okay, no, I really, that was my thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And Bob Kubota was like, "Just do the bit. Just do the bit for me," because we knew each other in the 80s hanging out the improv. Mm. So one night I do the bit, a woman comes in late and I look at her and I go, "Bounce, wow, wow." And the crowd goes crazy and she is just stone faced. And she reported to the, the USO rec center. I forget what it's called. She said, "This guy did sexual humor and he made it about me." Like, it was a formal complaint to the tour. And then Don had to talk to me and say, like, you can't do it. And I was like, "I did it for Bob."
It's for Bob.
So
did Bob confess? Did he step
up? Oh, not at all. So you got to understand, I'm one guy with one camera. And I open the show. Like, I'm going up cold, okay? Or you have, like, some lieutenant reads a piece of paper, you know? PE will be postponed 1 hour. Now Jordan Brady, a comedian.
You're like, and you just for that intro.
Yeah. So I'm off. I'm done. And then I go and do snippets of the other comedians from every show. And I get reaction shots of the crowd to use wherever I need to use them. So I actually had shots of the woman, and you see the expression on her face. And so I blurred it, but I barely blurred it. Like, I just blurred her eyes so you could see her scowl on her mouth. And the Department of Defense guy goes, look, this is all through email. He says, creatively, I get it. We do want to protect. Oh, she wasn't even in the military, by the way.
Oh. Okay.
She worked on the base in a civilian, consultancy capacity. Okay. That's the word. So I trimmed it a lot, and I blurred her out more. And I trimmed, like, Slade went off on her in an interview the next day. And so it's a little bit truncated because I didn't want to. It's a love letter to Bob Hope, Robin Williams, like people that have performed for years. It's a love letter to the troops. It's not meant to be this controversial Michael Moore film of.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that makes sense because you want to focus on what you want to focus on, which is like entertaining the troops, what the troops go through, how it alleviates, gives them something else to look forward to, you know, like, because it seems like from pretty much seems like everyone you interviewed, they're like, there is nothing going on. Like, we need this. You guys don't understand. That one guy was like, you're going to change fucking lives tonight. And it's like, he just kept saying it. He's like, first of all, I've got like 18, like, whatever, strap,
whatever.
Yeah. You know, like infrared, and you're going to change lives. And I was like, wow, that guy's intense.
He was intense. And he was on Robin Williams' private detail when he first got to the Middle East.
Uh-huh.
And he had said that. Yeah. No, that moments like that are docu gold.
Oh, yeah. When you're holding the camera and you're listening to that, what do you go like, I need to check everything? Or do you just go, just don't push stop? Or like, what goes through your mind as a filmmaker?
You go, oh my gosh, this is great. This is great. I hope the sound is good. Like, nobody talk and let it roll longer than you think.
Oh, so, you know, I've seen like a lot of like, you know, new filmmakers, even when I tried to make a doc once. And
what,
like,
was that about?
It was about Michigan's winningest football, high school football coach.
It's a great doc.
He's also completely deaf. And one of the other coaches didn't know that. And they would see him yelling at his players because he's deaf. And they just were like, this guy's so fucking intense, you know. But he was like 358-7 or something crazy.
Wow, that's a good doc. You got to pick that up.
Yeah, he's dead, and it was a long time ago. Me and my buddy tried to make that doc because I've been a huge doc fan since I was like 20. And
apparently,
yeah, I love.
You host a podcast dedicated to the medium.
But like, one of the things I've seen is like people will get something cool and then they'll like use the wide and tell, you know, they'll go in and then they'll come out. And then as an audience member, you're kind of like, Jesus, just keep it still. You know? Like, you see, like, what is that? Do you ever want to do that? Do you ever want to like get into focus or get a little closer crop shot? And you're just like, I don't want to touch this.
Well, the great thing about the Sony AX35 or whatever this is called.
Sponsored.
The AX33 actually.
Sponsored.
The autofocus is great. But I can tell you in I Am Comic, which was the first of these, I had more of a crew. Like, we would shoot 2 days of Kentucky Fried Chicken commercials Wednesday and Thursday. And I would say, hey, who wants to make a couple $100 tomorrow? Shoot. That's why the interviews look better.
Oh,
and we would go to the improv. And Scheidner would invite like 35 comedians that we're supposed to film in 2 hours or something.
Wow.
So that we would set up in light once we had better equipment for a lot of the interviews.
Got it.
But the had two wonderful DPs, and both of them, Jean Vienne is a woman I've worked with for 2 decades in commercials, and a director in her own right. And I would just look at her and she would nod. And then I would ask the question again, like I was stupid, so that she could zoom in and get the tight version.
Well, that's so this smart. Is like art.
It's a great technique. And I teach it, you know, at my boot camp. So like, I remember Eliza Schlesinger for I Am Comic was just a young comedian. You could tell she had great promise. And I don't think she knew that I dabbled in comedy back in the boom chicka boom days. So I go, what's a callback? And she's like, oh, a callback is when you, and the camera's wide. So I'd be like, oh, you know, the callback is when you refer to a previous joke that you've told and you repeat the catchphrase or whatever she said. And I took a beat and I look at the DP, you know, my friend Jean, the DP, and I kind of nod and I turn back to Eliza and like, so wait, let me get this straight. A callback is when you tell the same joke. Wait, you don't tell the same joke again. What is a callback again? And she goes, a callback is when you, and she repeats the answer. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so in the edit, and I don't know how it finally ended up, but you have, like, I know that the callback is an important thing for the movie. So you have two pieces of film, a wide and a tight, within a 90-second interview.
Something to cut around.
Yeah.
So do you like doing talking head stuff? Do you enjoy that kind of format? Would you like to do kind of like a roving Rod or Michael Moore kind of camera style?
I don't like the sit-down interviews that much.
Oh, you don't?
And I hate's a strong word, but I dislike when they put the other camera on the side.
Ugh.
I don't get it.
I don't either. Why are we in profile? Like, yeah, because I think Dateline, like those like 2020 investigates, they always have that. And they always add in a little purple lighting and a little smoke.
Yeah.
It's like a rhythmic alternative. Like they'll just cut on a rhythm or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it's to extract words. Right. Like you. Yeah. It's to extract the rambling part of the sentence. And you cut, it looks seamless. But to me, and maybe I'm just a savvy viewer, I go, oh, they what did they take out?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. What is Errol Morris's little machine thing?
Oh, the Interrogatron?
Interrotron?
The Interrotron, or yeah.
Oh, it's ingenious. Have and he's been, it? I have, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's, well, I don't know if I've seen his trademarked or patent-pended one, but what people do is they put a teleprompter-type thing in front of the lens, but instead of words for an actor or interviewee to read, it's his camera's feed.
Oh.
Right? So he's got a camera on him.
Oh, he's in a different room or something.
He's in a different room. And some people use it even if they're off just to the side in the same room so that we can look at each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Huh. That's really, yeah, his interviews, like that style is so mesmerizing. Like when you, like they're slightly off camera, usually with their eye line, and it's very, always very intense, you know. Do you have a favorite, like, okay, I have a lot of, all of a sudden I have, why docs? Like you make commercials, like why did you think like, oh, I want to make a documentary, I want to get into documentary filmmaking, or did they come first?
No, the documentaries kind of, well, the first real doc is 30 minutes. It's called Stand Up 101. I don't know where you can find it. Used to be at like Vidiot's, and I think Comedy Channel ran it in the middle of the night before Ha and Comedy Central merged. Ooh. Like I'm going way back, old right?
School, yeah.
I love so, it. Gen X, baby.
Yeah, definitely the Gen X comedy boom. You know, I was so happy I sold this thing to Comedy Channel for $5,000 or something. And it aired in the middle of the night a couple of times. It stars Wayne Fetterman.
Oh, he's your muse.
Janine Garofalo's in it. Bob Zaney's in it. And so here's how it happened. The UCLA Extension Program has like screenwriting, TV producing, and they have a comedy class since the 80s. And it's usually taught by someone. You go, oh, I know him. I know her. Well, I remember flipping through an old school catalog of courses, and I see Wayne Fetterman. My dear friend Wayne Fetterman is teaching the comedy class at the UCLA Extension, and he has not told me. I'm finding out through the magic of print. So behind his back, I make a deal with the Regents of California to document the class as long as I get everybody's release. And I show up with whatever the camcorder of the day was, some wireless mics, and I attend every class. I even help Wayne orchestrate a showing, like a showcase at the end of the class at this club called Igby's in West LA. It was a great club back in the day.
Can you, now it's a, what year are we talking?
I think it's like 89, 90.
Okay. So he was teaching back then?
On a whim. He just did the one semester.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So then I start egging him on to get better guest speakers, like get Janine, because he and Janine were friends. And we did the showcase at Zany's where I brought a decent crew and I cut this little doc. So that was before I was, you know, I was starting to make commercials at that point, but I hadn't made any features at that point. I was, you know, self-taught, as your long intro says. So that was the first one, but I Am Comic came about. I was in Uruguay, in Montevideo. Am I saying that right? In Uruguay.
Yeah.
Shooting a Danone yogurt commercial with kids.
Okay.
For a global market, because it's cheap there.
Right, yeah.
The young creatives from New York, and this is like 2007, 2008, there's this new thing called YouTube.
Right.
So I'm over directing kids, and I don't speak Spanish, and they don't speak English, and I'm trying to do this commercial. And I come back to the Video Village. That's where the ad agency and the yogurt clients are there. And one of them goes, "Oh, my God, you're on YouTube." I'm like, "What? Oh, yeah, yeah." And the green suit or whatever bad 90s clothes or 80s clothes I was right. wearing. Like, there's this clip. And it was me doing Evening at the Improv or MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour, a big show back in the day. And, like, what was that like? And then for the next few years, that question started popping up on my sets. Like, I'm in the Village hanging out while they light. What was it like to be a comedian? What was it like? And then I just one day was like, I can't answer it anymore. I'm just going to make a documentary.
Oh, interesting.
That's how that came to be.
Were you a doc fan before that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was your, like, gateway doc? What got you into docs?
I mean, American movies.
Fuck yeah.
Like, so yeah, good, so funny. I mean, it's brilliant on so many levels.
So fucking brilliant.
I mean, Roger and Me is so good when the lady goes, she's skinning rabbits in her backyard and going, looking around like, I shouldn't be doing this. Like, you're on film.
It's pets so are meat. Yeah. Yeah, the pets are meat scene. That was the one for me. It was Marjo.
American movie?
No, Roger and Me. Marjo, yeah. And Roger and Me. I rented those from our local library because they were free. All the documentaries were free to rent. And I just would pick up 10 of them and just watch them. And then I saw Roger and Me and I was like, oh, fuck, what is this? Like, what is this style? This is awesome.
There's another one called Theremin.
Oh, yeah. About the guy who invented the theremin.
Like theremin. Dr. Theremin or whatever his name, Vladimir Theremin. And it's a love story. And that one is wonderful. Valentino?
Actor?
No, not Valentino. The designer.
Isn't it Valentino? The guy that did the umbrellas and.
That's Christo. That's a designer. Christo, right. I'm talking about a fashion guy. Why am I blanking? And it's about his last hurrah. And he and his lover. It's another love story. It's beautiful.
That's a doc that you.
That's a doc that I. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't know if I've seen that, but not quite sure who we're talking about.
Because Anvil, that came later, but Anvil, the story of Anvil, you know that one?
Oh, yeah.
That was very American movie-like.
It is. It is. And it's also like real-life Spinal Tap. It's insane how much it mirrors Spinal Tap. It's fucking nuts. Dude, when they're in the Czech Republic and they're not getting paid and they have that, those scenes are amazing. I love that. So do you have another I Am something comic in mind? Is I Am podcast comic?
I Am TikTok comic.
I mean, the real pivot would be to do I Am podiatrist. Sure. Like, it has nothing to do with stand up. It's just the I Am series. And there are, you know, go to a foot doctor convention, almost like good hair.
Uh-huh, right.
Right. And I think that would be funny. I'm producing a documentary that my friend Pat Reynolds is directing on radio satirist legend Phil Hendry.
Oh, Phil Hendry, man.
You know who Phil Hendry is?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and Henry Rollins is in it, did an interview. Bill Hader, Judd Apatow.
Oh, wow.
Wayne Fetterman.
Who is that? Yeah. I'm not familiar with his work.
Wayne has been in every movie I've ever made.
I know, he's your muse.
He's in a little scene film with Jenna Malone called, they changed the name. It was Lifer's Picnic. It's called Confessions of an American Girl, like an indie that just went nowhere. And Wayne's a paramedic.
Oh, nice.
And waking up in Reno with Billy Bob Thornton and Charlize Theron, Wayne is in the chicken suit. Because when you have a friend that you want to put in a movie and you offer him a part, he says yes. And he goes, what do I play? And I say, well, Ronnie the Rooster.
Of course, that's your part. Which brings us to the chicken joke in I Am Paddle Comic. It's going full circle.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So how do you transition from military, not military, college, not college, stand-up comedy, not stand-up comedy, filmmaker? Like, how do you go from that to directing commercials? That's such a weird leap.
ADHD and lack of commitment to any one particular thing. It's actually quite an easy journey.
Okay.
So the military thing, like I don't call myself a Marine. You're the brother of a sergeant major. Like I completed the one summer. I never went back for the thing. So I'm doing comedy, natural calling. And that takes me around the country, takes me to England, Canada. And now I'm living in LA. And I'm hired to host a game show, which a lot of comedians make good game show hosts, right? So same skill set. It's like riffing with the crowd. You would be an excellent game show host. So I'm working on that. We did like 85 episodes in a summer. And I'm looking at, I'm like, wow, this is cool. And I'm shooting stuff and I have a camcorder on the road and I'm teaching myself. I'm reading, editing books and shit like that. I'm like, wow, I really like this behind the scenes. So you start writing bits and start shooting little things and stand up 101. And then I, speaking of Spinal Tap, I ended up making the country music Spinal Tap as my first feature film. It's called Dill Scallion.
Okay.
Wayne Fetterman plays Doc the bassist in that one.
Nice.
Billy Burke is the lead actor in the titular role. And we had a bus. We rented a bus and we went around the country and performed at gigs. Like I literally got them gigs and filmed it like a Borat style.
Interesting.
And this is in 96, 1996, 97, I think it was. Yeah, 97, came out 99, like at Slam Dance, and then DVD and Showtime and VH1 picked it. Like, it had a nice run, and that got me into commercials. Like, I would pitch people to raise money for that movie, and I remember this one ad agency and this production company go, or the production company says, we're not giving you money for your indie film. Like, I'd show them a trailer to raise more money, but you can pitch on this commercial. It was for WD-40, and that was my first, like, real commercial, and I had done promos for Comedy Central and shit like that. So,
oh, wow.
So as I was still doing comedy, like, I did promos on the road from the Houston Laugh Stop, and I would ship them back to Comedy Central.
When you say doing promos, what does that mean?
Well, I started writing and directing promo campaigns. Probably the best was we did one for the Ben Stiller show, and we got the cast together. We got Ben Stiller, like, when Comedy Central acquired the show.
Right.
And since it was dead, we had Ben Stiller and Janine and Andy Dick, and I want to say Bob Odenkirk was on that show.
Yeah.
Digging up the big cassettes from a grave. Uh-huh. Hollywood Cemetery.
Did Wayne Fetterman play Stiller? Did you have him?
Yeah.
Is that how you met Judd Apatow? Because I know, wasn't he? He was a writer on that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't meet Judd there. I met Judd at the Improv.
Oh, okay.
Judd would host like Friday nights. He was a great MC.
Okay, cool. That's how I met Wayne, was at the Improv, and I had to introduce him, and I said, what do you want for your intro? And he was like, I don't know. I'm not sure, whatever. And then I was like, okay. And then Judd Apatow walked up, and I was like, fuck, it's Judd Apatow. And then Wayne said, this is Paco. He's going to introduce me. And Judd said, what kind of comedy do you do to me? And I was like, I don't know. You're Judd Apatow. And then Wayne was like, yeah, what kind of comedy do you do? Because I don't want to come up after you if you're like one of these like crazy big, you know. And I was like, what is going on? I was like, I just want your intro because you guys are legends. And now, and then so afterwards, I was talking to Judd outside, and he was talking about being a poor comedian and making your way up as he's leaning on his Maserati that was parked out front. I was like, this is insane.
And was this like a couple years ago?
It was 5 years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Because Judd came back into stand-up.
Right.
And I know Wayne was opening for him on the road and writing material, and they were working together on that.
And I think Judd performed that night as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's when he was first like putting it back together.
Oh, that's a fun story.
He produced the Gary Shandling thing too, right?
Judd, yeah. Oh, produced and directed that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was I have so many questions for you. How do you feel about these docuseries? Do you like them?
Oh, yeah.
Do you hate them? Do you have no...
It depends on the, it's a case by case basis. So, you know, my wife and I, we love the QAnon.
Oh, you love that one?
Yeah. It was a whodunit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we liked, what was the one about the cult? Like Nowhere, North Nexium? Country.
Oh, Nexium. Wild Country, you're thinking.
Wild Country was good, but Nexium was better.
Yeah.
Cause that guy was a weasel.
The weasel. Like, there's not much more weasel than you can get than that dude. Mm-hmm.
But I think the docuseries is, it's to me, I like the buttoned up feature. So I think the docuseries is is born of the streaming era, mm-hmm. which was accelerated by the pandemic. Because I love going into a theater with a congregation of people, watching a documentary and leaving and having a feeling and some questions left over. And, you know, that to me is a great experience.
Right.
That is, you know, may or may not come back to the way it was, but the docuseries is, you know, there's some great films.
Right. Yeah. There's some, I mean, the, The Stephen Avery one, you know, Making a Murderer, like the 10-part documentary. Yeah. I mean, that to me was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And The Staircase, like that's a masterpiece of filmmaking and docuseries. But now it's like we've made a 8-part docuseries on where paper comes from. And it's like, fuck, like this could have really just been one, guys. You know, like now it's I always feel like it's like, all right, this is too many episodes.
Right. They're stretching it out to fill the order. I mean, that's what I loved about, look, Apatow clearly has a relationship with HBO that goes back for years, but I love the Shanley doc and I love just how personal that was and how I think, I mean, I can't speak for him, but it felt cathartic for Judd because this is his mentor and friend and he had such personal stuff in those diaries. Like, talk about docu-gold, you know, when you find that.
Yeah, that's insane. That is insane. Like, that story is in his story of becoming a – I mean, I'm talking about Judd. Like, his story in comedy and then getting into working and producing in the Larry Sanders Show. And then Gary's fucking story.
Yeah.
Especially of the story of the Carlin going to see Carlin. And Carlin just like, whatever, kid, you know. And then him just like, I'm not going to take no for an answer, you know. And it's like – That's insane. I did tell to Wayne though when we were talking to him about it. I'm like, there are emperors that don't have a 4-part docuseries about them.
Yeah, you
know, like, we are talking about a stand up comedian, but yeah, Gary was beloved, and they did such a good job. And then they Wayne showed us the booklet that the everyone funeral. Got at the funeral.
Yeah.
At the
right.
Afterwards, which was stunning. You know,
there was a lot of love there.
Yeah. There is a lot. It would be, have you ever, I mean, you make commercials. So I was going to say, have you ever made anything that you just were dispassionate about? Like, how, I wonder how you deal with something like that.
Dannon in Uruguay.
Oh, no, I love all the commercials. I really do.
Well, because you've made over 1,200 commercials.
Well, I mean, there are some that you favor more than others. Like if you're doing a campaign, you know, and you're doing 6 spots and that used to be 3 or 4 days. Now with comedy dialogue, you know, you can do 2 spots in a day or 3. I've done 4 in a day if they're simple with great actors.
Holy shit.
But if you're doing like a pharmaceutical commercial, it's inversely proportionate. You'll get like 4 or 5 days to do 1 ad.
Oh, interesting.
You know, everybody's got to be in the paddle boat and then by the fair. And then
there's usually a couple in bathtubs. A
couple in bathtubs. Yeah.
All right. You know, George and I are both commercial actors. So
that's good to know.
We'll send our headshots along. I mean, that's.
Mine might take a while. Yeah.
mine's standing against a tree. So,
Jordan, you mentioned one thing that we kind of got at you on this show. You mentioned on Twitter that you kind of felt like there's sort of like a wave of comedy docs. Like you kind of feel personally like you're over comedy docs, or that like there's a wave of comedy docs that you're like not into. Is that right? Or without throwing anyone particularly under the bus.
Yeah, no. Hey, yeah. And anybody listening that wants to make a comedy doc or any doc, you can email me. I'm easy to find. DM me. I'll help as best I can.
Oh, right? That's awesome.
How to avoid pitfalls, things to look out for. I just think, George, that I tweeted that because there are so many docs about comedy. Mm-hmm. Like I saw Heckler at the Laugh Factory and I approached Michael Addis, the director of that.
Is that Jamie Kennedy?
The Jamie Kennedy, yeah. And I said, hey, let me take you to coffee and pick your brain because, you know, you cram so much information into that. And I learned a lot from him. And I learned a lot watching docs. I just felt like I wanted to make She-Be Comics as about female comedians.
Oh, because Hysterical just came out.
And Hysterical came out. And they have the clip from I Am Comic in there of Nikki Glaser. And I was like, well, now that sort of prompted it. Because I liked Hysterical. By the way, why didn't they call it Hysterical? Missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity.
I felt like when you start using clips from other comedy docs in your doc, maybe it's maybe we need to take a break.
Right.
That's not a slam, I swear. Like, I remember a friend asked me a couple years ago, hey, do you mind if they use this clip? And I said, if they have a good fair use attorney, they don't have to ask me. They can just use it.
Right.
And I'll give them the master, pull what you want off the DVD. And then when you find out what you want, I'll give you a master like from my garage and you can have a great quality. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen, but I'm flattered to have the clip in the movie. And they even credited it on screen. I was very, very, very humbled by that.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. And we were talking a little bit about the Great Depression.
Yeah, the docu element of that I think is great. Mm-hmm. And I wish more stand-up specials incorporated that, because we get to know a little more than just the jokes.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's the woman that did one? She spends time with her grandmother. Oh, not Jenny Slade, but Jenny.
Oh,
wait, it's a stand-up
Jenny
special.
Slate does, yeah, Jenny Slate does hang out with her family. I was also thinking of the Whitmer Thomas one,
which does a little
bit of a documentary element to it as well. It's called The Golden One or The Golden Child. It's on HBO also. I haven't seen The Great Depression, but I think it's a little bit of biographical memoir aspect to it as well as just a set. Yeah.
Well, and Eddie Pepitone's doc, The Bitter Buddha. By young Stevie Fine Arts. He's not young, but it's fun to say it like that.
Yeah.
I love that movie. And just, I think it was a perfect blend of stand-up and doc. Mm-hmm. Like, just enough.
Right. Yeah. I do, too. The Bitter Buddha is one of my favorite comedy docs because it's Eddie Pepitone, for one.
Yeah.
And you get to meet his dad and stuff. Like, it's like Jeff Capri could have, like, an interesting doc about, you know, with him and his dad. Like, that was a very interesting moment in your doc, in I Am Battle Comic, when he's talking to his Catskill comedian father and he's like, I got a joke for you, kid, you know. Like,
I love that. As a matter of fact, I wanted to film them together. Yeah, they did a gig together in Atlantic City, so it was like I Am Son of Comic or son, there was some, you know, I'm terrible with the titles, but there was something there. And I think at the time I was working and couldn't make it to the show. And if I don't want to send a crew,
right.
Like, I want to be there.
Yeah. I mean, that's gotta be tough. It's like, you know, being Buddy Hackett's son, or, you know, being the son of like a daughter of a established like legendary comic, and you're a comic. I mean, that would be so weird.
But son of comic, which would include daughters,
right?
You know, Pauly Shore, his dad, Sammy Shore,
Sammy's
comedian, Jeff Capri, and Dick Capri would be the stars. You know, Dick Capri is in I Am Battle Comic. A clip from him back at the real Friars Club roasts.
Oh my God.
And it gets a laugh every screening.
It's because you don't know where that joke's going.
Yeah. Oh, right?
When he's telling that joke, it's like, where is this going? Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I watched one of his like Ed Sullivan clips today. Dick Capri was on Sullivan, I think, probably a few times. I don't know. But I watched one of them because I was like, who is this guy? I want to learn more about Dick Capri.
Yeah, it's classic. It's funny because Phyllis Diller was in I Am Comic, and I got to interview her for for a couple other like film festivals asked me to interview her afterwards. And I'd go to her house, and she was always able to turn it on. And I remember before the interview, she said, Jordan, is this a live set? In other words, is the crew allowed to laugh? And I was like, she's telling me that the crew's allowed to laugh. And I said, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I don't do Phyllis Diller, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
And she tells a joke, like a one-liner, and it gets a laugh every time. And it's her timing. And then her tag is the laugh at her own joke.
Oh, right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I've seen other comics do that. Other like I love Nate Bargatze, and he'll end a joke with like, so,
Yeah.
It's kind of the same kind of thing.
Anyway. Well, Chappelle did a special where he tapped the mic on his leg repeatedly to get some Pavlovian response. But it fit to the rhythm.
So who's a legend that you've not met and talked to that you would love to interview, like comedian?
You know, I love that Nate special he did outside,
so
by the way.
Yeah.
It's really fun. And it's just, it'll be a time stamp for the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's great. I love Nate.
To answer your question, Chris Rock. I've never met Chris Rock. And I love Chris Rock's comedy. I love his specials. Most of the movies.
Right. Fargo, did you watch the recent season?
I have not seen it. It shows up on my queue every time. And I'm like, well, you got to understand, my wife and I, when we binge, like, it's a weekend, right? Yeah. So it's like, I didn't watch Game of Thrones till like six seasons in. And she goes, okay, I'll start at the beginning.
Oh,
and like in 2 months, we went through, we were caught to the future.
When you watch movies with her, is she like, yeah, I don't know about that scene. They should have really moved that.
That's a callback.
That is a callback. That's what that is. That is a callback. Oh, Jordan, this has been awesome. I feel like I could talk to you for hours and hours. But thank you for being on SupDoc. This is great to finally get to talk to you and get to meet you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm a fan of the show. I've followed you guys for a long number of years now. And it's a real treat to be on the show with you.
Yeah, you can be you can be one of our return guests. Next time you have something out, we'll just bring you back.
I love it.
Your buddy Wayne.
Yes, please. Yeah, come back. Let us know what's happening. If you have, we'll put your socials in the notes and all that good stuff so people can follow you. But yeah, absolutely. If you have any, just like you got some strong opinions about what docs are doing, just let us know. And we'll bring you back and talk it out.
You know, I got to say, I love them all. Like, I'm not saying that they shouldn't make more. It's just, if it's just a cover song of another doc, you know, one of my favorites is, and I'll shut up, Bonnie McFarlane's Women Aren't Funny. Mm-hmm. Because it was so fresh, and she did bits within the doc. Like, she dresses up as a man and goes on stage. Right. She's out in the field, you know. Like, I want that kind of stuff, not just follow the comedian and do the thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I liked it when they got into the wacky cold openings for a while. There's a few years where there's, like, wacky cold openings, and then they walk out on stage, and it's like...
Oh, for comedy specials, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the wacky... I remember... Yeah, like Jeff Foxworthy did a Showtime thing where he literally fell off a turnip truck. And it must have been like a big to-do. And it was funny. And he, yeah.
That's awesome.
But why? Like, just get to the jokes.
Just open it. Yeah, let's just get to the jokes, kid.
By the way, if you want to show a clip that shows what the mind of a comedian... Jeff Foxworthy, who is a dear friend and kills, right?
Yeah, he's a legend.
Like, I love all types of comedy. He comes off stage at the Phoenix Amphitheater in the Round, and I'm filming it, right, for I Am Comic. And he's coming right from the stage towards my camera, and I've got it right there. And this is one of those moments where you said, what do you do? Right, when do you know you have comedy gold? He's coming right at the camera, and I go, Jeff, you destroyed, man. I mean, that was an hour and a half. And he goes, he looks at his watch, he goes, about an hour 40. I mean, then it would never go, are you kidding me? That don't cut 10 minutes off of my set. Right. That was an hour 40.
All right.
I'll hit the stop.
He's just on top of his game here.
That is a man who knows what he's doing for sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, sir. It was great.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we will talk soon.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com, recapping reality since 2015.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel. Our show was engineered by Will Scoville. Our associate producer is Nick Coltis.
Please donate to the show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast. If you want to help us in other ways, please share the show with a friend.
Join the Doc Talk and check out our hot takes, pictures, and videos on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We're SupDoc Podcast on all those platforms.
And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
To find out more about my and George's comedy gigs, check out our About Us page on our website.
And SupDoc is by Doc fans for Doc fans. So if you want to advertise, got a film or opinions you want to share, just hit us up.
We'd love to hear more from you and what you're docking out on. So email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.